He had searched for sniper rifles among the weaponry in the Quonset hut, and near a Barrett 1A had found a case of Steyr long blasters and boxes of ammo, along with the rotary mag they used. Nothing lucky about it, just hard-working brains, that's all. Silas was mad but not a fool, and he had stocked only the best weapons in the armory of his Shiloh base. Mildred was struggling to balance her load of ammo pouches, plast charges, and the med kit. Incredibly, it was from a time after she went into cryosleep and had some items she couldn't identify. That made it worth more than anything imaginable. What fantastic breakthroughs had been accomplished just before Skydark while she slumbered in her frozen coffin?
Hey, what was that?
Christie snicked off the safety of the long blaster with a sweep of her thumb. She started toward the stairs in a crouch and paused at the bottom step. The rest of the companions braced for an attack, and the redhead tensely waited, her hair motionless about her lovely face, as the woman strained to catch the sound again. Minutes passed, and she slowly, reluctantly, relaxed.
Must have been some of the automatic machinery.
Christie glanced at the silent water pump across the room. The base did a lot of repairs all by itself, monitoring water pressure, and the elevator ran up and down every few days to keep the cables greased. Was that what she had heard?
What did you think it was?
Doc tightly gripped the AK-47. The scholar was well versed in the operation of automatic weapons, even though he much preferred the solid reliability of a revolver. Blasters like his Lamah and Jack's Colt Python 357 Magnum didn't even have a jam factor. They couldn't jam, unlike a rapid fire. A person could load a revolver, stick it somewhere, and pull it out 10 years later to shoot. Good as gold they were. With an automatic, a person was forced to unload the clip and ease off bolts constantly. Damn things required more maintenance than a thoroughbred colt. But in the forthcoming Donnybrook, Doc knew this was the tool needed to assure success. So be it. The Lamah was ready to go if the Kalashnikov failed. Christie started to speak just as the water pump for the fusion reactor began to thump softly.
Just the pump. Guess I'm a little on edge. Too much coffee at breakfast.
You sure? Ryan glanced up the stairs. Nothing was in sight, and no noise could be heard over the steadily working pump. She smiled.
Yeah, I'm sure. Come on, let's get going. We have a long walk to reach the quarry.
Lighting their torches, the companions opened the door and were startled to see a couple of runts curled in fetal positions on the rocky ground, snoring soundly. As the fluorescent light washed over the muties, they awoke with a start and backed away, bowing and scraping to the tall norms.
Machine guard, we waited!
Ryan glowered down at the diminutive being.
As I ordered. Has all been done that I asked?
Yes, Scott.
The other held a three-fingered hand before its pale face to block out the bright illumination of the redoubt.
We obey all!
Show me.
Ryan strode down the tunnel, making the runts race to keep abreast of the big man. Once more, Dean stayed behind and watched the adults proceed deeper into the underground. Somebody had to make sure the entrance to the redoubt was still available when they returned. The heavy door didn't even have a handle or lock on the outside. If it closed, the companions would have been forced to go outside and cross open country to enter the redoubt through the front door. Settling in his chair, Dean rested the Kalashnikov in his lap. Taking out his pocket knife, he started to cut slices off a brick of military cheese from an MRE pack and prepared for a long wait. Then something bounced down the stairs, clanging and banging on every step and issuing volumes of gray smoke. The boy gasped at the sight of the military gas grin, then realized his mistake, but it was too late. Trying to force limp fingers to trigger the long blaster, he slumped over and lay unnaturally still within the billowing gray cloud. One level above, Colette smiled in satisfaction at the sound of the body hitting the floor. Sliding combat boots back on her bare feet, the woman drew a knife, impatiently waiting for the life support system of the redoubt to clear the air and allow her to finally reach the staggering pile of weapons and supplies so tantalizingly close below. Reaching the end of the tunnel, the companions and their mutie guides went down the incline to find even more runts waiting for them with offerings of mushrooms, smoked rats, and baskets of fluffy moss.
Gifts!
The chief gestured at the baskets.
Much food!
Ryan looked over the assortment and pointed the Kalashnikov at the attending runts. They went deathly still until he laid the long blaster on a shoulder.
I am pleased, but we don't need more food yet. You may keep and eat.
Hail, Machine God! Hail, Machine Gods!
The runts cheered wildly at the magnificent gift, only a few of their numbers glowering in open hostility at the norms. But those muties also stayed well away from the muzzles of the deadly blasters.
Now take us to where your old god died, and I want 50 of your strongest workers to follow. We have much to do.
Will this bring more food?
Better.
On cue, JB tossed a cloth bundle at the feet of the little mutie. It came apart as it hit the ground, spilling out dozens of knives. The runts stared at the steel weapons and reached for them, then looked at Ryan for permission. The Deathlands warrior nodded, and the chief lifted a blade, marveling at its shine, then testing the edge on a palm. A line of blood welled from his skin and flowed along his hairless arm.
Magic knives!
The chief brandished the bowie knife, and the runts chorused the words over and over in a wild frenzy.
It shall be done as you command, God.
The leader hugged the knife and bowed deeply, his twin tufts of hair brushing the pile of weapons. The companions waited while the chief distributed the knives to the female warriors and a select few of the males. Then, choosing his workforce, the proud runt led the norms from the cavern into a warren of caves. Zigzagging through a maze of cracks and hewn tunnels, the runts led the companions back to the crashed wag. Once there, Ryan had the muties start a relay line, hauling the smaller of the rocks from the pile until the tiny pinprick of light from the outside world was enlarged to a medium-sized hole. Satisfied, Ryan dismissed the runts, sending them back to their vill. The chief was the last to go, dragging his feet and stalling, obviously hoping to be allowed to stay. But when Ryan began to frown, the chief took flight and disappeared into the subterranean darkness. Jack studied the purplish illumination outside.
Twilight. Gotta wait some.
Ryan checked his wrist chron.
Maybe an hour or so till night. Time to get ready.
Dropping their packs, the companions gratefully stretched their muscles, working out some kinks. Meanwhile, Christy opened her duffel bag and started passing out the long strips of blue cloth. JB tied a length around his head, pirate fashion.
I never asked where you got this stuff.
Christy removed the cron from her wrist and attached it farther up her arm, safely under a sleeve.
Officers' quarters. Lots of Navy and Air Force uniforms still hanging in the closet. Army camo is the best, but this blue is dark enough.
Opening the door to the wag, Ryan went behind the seats and got a tire iron, then proceeded to remove the lug nuts of both front tires. Rocks under the wag prevented it from lowering to the ground, and the man had no trouble removing the castle nuts on the axle and sliding off the main bearing assembly. He proffered a handful of axle grease to the others.
Use it sparingly. This is all we have.
Christy dabbed in a finger and smeared the cold grease over her cheek, leaving a wide black streak. JB followed her example.
Me next.
Jack tied back his long, snowy hair.
Need rag for this.
Christy passed the teenager a cloth. Doc brushed a hand over his waves of silvery hair.
I do believe that I shall need similar protection myself, madam. This will reflect light like a mirror.
Hey, boots!
Jack pointed at Christy's feet. The redhead looked and cursed. The silver-embroidered falcons on her blue cowboy boots would stand out in the darkness like a neon banner. Ripping another uniform to strips, she bound her footwear until the silver was properly masked.
Bombs prepped?
Ryan smeared grease over his face. Strips of cloth were already wrapped around the barrels of their weapons to prevent any reflection. He had passed by dozens of Parkerized automatics in the Quonset hut, and those were perfect for this kind of attack. But the metal also corroded easily, and so he hadn't taken any. That had been a mistake on his part. Hopefully not a deadly one. The armorer patted the heavy bag at his side.
Don't know how many boilers the Ville's power plant has, so I used all of the plast from the Claymore and spare grins to make 6 bombs. When these go off, the boiler will erupt, taking out most of the Ville, and the rest will be washed with steam. Not many folks are going to be alive after that.
Ryan greased up his neck, then the back of his hands.
One should go on the main support column of the dish. Buckle that, and gravity will finish the job.
And then we go in and remove any survivors?
Doc tucked another blue cloth into his shirt to hang down like a bib and cover the white linen frills. JB lifted a squat package.
Got it covered.